Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. I'm Rob Greaves, and it's a pleasure to host this final part of the story of Helen Harmer. Over the first couple of weeks, we learned about Helen's early life in and around Warrigal. Born in 1941, with a shortage of toys and children's books, she and the other children learned to be both self-reliant and innovative, two of the many qualities that Helen carried throughout her life. Eventually moving to a more urban lifestyle, she enters high school and decides to become a teacher. During her time at Teachers College, she meets and eventually marries Ted Harmer, himself a teacher. In this final program, Helen's story includes more tales of her grandfather and grandmother, including some fascinating stories about them living in a house the grandfather had built, with part of it being made from wattle and daub. We learn why Helen was out of teaching for some 12 years and the circumstances that brought her back into the field. But it's the stories Helen shares about Ted, including the circumstance of his death, that show the devotion they had for each other and the love Ted had for the country. This was a love only equaled by that for Helen, his family and his home, and this forms a really important part of Helen's own story. We pick up now with Helen talking about her grandparents.
My grandparents' house, the one at Harkaway, the one that my granddad built, it was an amazing house. But they moved from Mordialloc, and he put his wife, they had a nice house in Mordialloc, as you believe, but he wanted to go farming, so he bought this land out Harkaway. He bought on the wrong side of the hill, my dad used to always say. My mum was on the right side. She was in the rich part where the cattle could thing. Dad bought over where they eventually made it into a quarry and dug.
Oops.
On the wrong side of the hill, Dad used to say. Yeah. We're from the wrong side of the hill. But no, he built a wattle and kitchen.
Oh, wow.
And a lean-to thing.
Goodness me.
And Grandma cried. She told us. I cried when I saw it, she used to say, because she'd left this nice house. But she had Uncle Alec, she had two boys. She ended up, they had four children in the end, but there was a girl. And but there were the two boys. And my dad was 8, I think, when they moved there. He was 8 years old. So he helped build the house from the age of 8. They went out and cut all the logs and stuff to build it. And he ended up with this, it looks like a bit like a Californian bungalow, but he built a big kitchen, and then he built a big lounge room with a huge fireplace in between that served both the kitchen and the, so he built one chimney. And it had, you walked into the lounge, into the dining room, lounge room, the living area, and there was a big fireplace, and that had bookshelves built in on either side that went from the floor to the ceiling. He built all the furniture for the house. He built dressers and whatever. And he played the harp, would you believe?
Goodness. That's a very unusual instrument to be playing.
Yeah, yes. He played the harp. We used to love holidays there. And then he built a big veranda all the way around with big pillars on it. It looks a little bit like a Californian bungalow, but on much larger.
Yes.
And when Bella arrived, her name was Isabel, but when she came, the two boys he built in the back veranda, and that was like a big sleep out for the boys on the back veranda. And then he built in, there were already two bedrooms. Then he built in at the other side, but the only way he could access it was a sliding panel in the wall, and he slid that back and he walked through the panel in the wall.
So he just kept adding on.
He kept adding on.
He just kept tacking on more rooms.
He kept adding on to it. But it looks the complete thing because he started off with the complete roof.
Uh-huh.
And then he built in all these sides of it. And there was tank water and the pump that you pump water on the back veranda. There was...
Wood fire stove?
Yes. No electricity at all.
Right.
Big Lux wood fire stove. We had Lux wood fire stoves on the farm too, a temple stove. I learned to cook on a Lux wood fire. My mum taught me to cook. Because she'd been to Emily McPherson College. Mm.
It's a lot more work, but the cooking is in some ways far superior, isn't it, to some of the stoves they make today?
Oh, the cooking. It still amazes me how my mother could... She made Victoria sponges to die for. My mum, she perfected it. She won prizes in the Melbourne show and all sorts of things. But there was always something on the top. There was always...
Something bubbling away, cooking away.
On the top. Because we ate a lot of mutton and those sorts of things. So you ate a lot of stews and things like that. And you put in a roast and then you'd put in the... We always had soup, a main and a dessert in our house. We never missed it. Every night we had... The three.
Almost a ritual.
It was a ritual. And we always knew when Mum couldn't think of anything else, we had bread and butter pudding because she had bread and she had plenty of milk and cream.
Of course, yes.
So that's what we got. If Mum couldn't think of a flash dessert, we got bread and butter pudding. It was very different to cooking. And then you put in the next thing or you'd have someone call in and while you were talking here, you put a batch of scones in the oven.
So the stove was basically going constantly, wasn't it?
My dad, on the farm, he used to go up to we were on two properties. We were on an old farm at 40 acres where they ran the dry stock, which was a very old farmhouse. It was a traditionally old farmhouse. To get from the kitchen to the rest of the house, you had to walk across an open veranda to get into the rest of the house. And so we lived in this great big kitchen pretty much.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You slept in the other part, but you lived in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And, Dad used to light the fire. And, of course, the hot water system ran off that fire.
Yes.
So you had to virtually keep the fire
going. It was the central feature of the house, was it? Warmth, cooking, water, yes.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning back time, turning back time. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Helen Harmer, and Helen is recalling stories of her grandmother's early days.
Take you back a step now to where we were earlier. You have your four children. They're starting to grow up. Is that when you restart your career?
I dropped out of it for 12 years.
Right.
And Ted's mother, she was a school teacher. She was the infant mistress at Gardenvale Central School. And she came back to teaching when Ted's dad went to the war. Ted's dad was in Singapore and he ended up in Changi.
Oh dear, okay.
And so he didn't come home till 46. So Ted grew up without a dad, but he had an older brothers that virtually...
Yes, filled that role, yes.
And so I dropped out of it for 12 years. But I was helping at the local school where the kids went to. I was president of the Mother's Club and I was helping in the library and I was listening to kids read and all that sort of stuff. And one day I was walking down the corridor and the principal walked out and he said, "You were a school teacher once, weren't you, Helen?" I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Would you like a job?" And I said, oh, it depends on what it is.
Mm.
And he said, would you like to be the librarian? And I said, oh. He said, you know how to cover books and things, don't you? I said, yes, I've been doing that for 12 months or a while, you know, and yeah. Whatever. He said, well, would you like it? He said, because the librarian's going on long service leave for 3 months, would you like that? And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I'll have to ask Ted. So I came home and I said to Ted, you know, and Ted, I don't want you to do it. And I said, why? And he said, I saw my mum work because she had seven children. He said, and all through the war, he said, I saw my mum work so hard and my weekends was her getting them ready to get the next week to go to work, and of course she had to catch buses because she couldn't drive and whatever, you know, to teach. And she kept teaching. She didn't give it away when Pop came home. She kept going right up until the end. And in fact, she was still teaching at 67.
Goodness.
So she taught for a long time.
Yes, yes.
And he sort of said, oh, you know, I saw my mum. And then he said, I'll help. But if we can keep things pretty much as they are in, you know.
A lifestyle.
Because we went away every school holidays. We camped. And we'd have the van or the camper van or the thing all ready to go when school broke up. I did that. So Ted would come home from school, kids would come home, they'd chuck them their school stuff in the cupboard, and we put on our camping gear and we were away. Every school holiday.
I'd like to come back and look at that in a second. So we'll come back to the camping bit. Nothing really changed dramatically around him, he was okay.
He was okay. Mm. So, and it was part-time first, so it was only going to be part-time. So he said, yeah, you can, you know, have a go. So I started 2.5 days a week, and then I gradually increased it. Got up to 4 days, and then at one stage we found a tape with Ted saying this to his sister on a little tape once. I came home and I said, I think I'd like to go back and do librarianship if I had to upgrade my qualifications. Yes. And if I wanted to go full time. Yes. Or anything. And I said, I think I'll go back and apply for librarianship and see if, you know, and see if I can do it part-time. They would only let you do study full-time. They wouldn't let you do, so you had to sort of drop out of it. And I was a bit fearful that if I dropped out of it, I wouldn't get back into
it. Yes, of course.
And when you came back in, like I did, I came back in on the bottom of the list, so I'd been out of it for 12 years.
Yeah,
so I
that's
came
a long
back
time.
In underneath all the people who'd come through Teachers College.
Yes, all the new graduates.
I was down the bottom again. And that was a thing that they shouldn't have allowed, because we had no super.
Mm.
And I still haven't got, I've got super, bounty, because my husband put super into mine. But we had no super. So, but anyway, I said, oh, I'll go back and do it. And he just looked at me and said, have you lost your marbles? Because he'd been teaching for so long, he couldn't think of it.
Goodness.
And I said, I think I could, you know. And he said, we'll make it happen. So he made it happen. Because I don't drive a car.
Mm.
So the car rolled up at the railway station here in Glen Waverley every Friday night, and I worked it, so I did it part-time. I taught part-time at the local school down here at Brentwood, and I did 2.5 days at Melbourne State College, and I did that for 2 years, and the car would be at the station waiting for me with the four kids stuck in it. Friday night, it automatically went round to the fish and chip shop.
Yes, it knew its way.
It knew its way after 2 years. It automatically stopped. The kids used to yell out to Ted, you know, he'd say, "What do you want?" And they'd say, "Don't forget your pickled onion, Dad."
So I assume by all of this you actually completed and succeeded and got your librarian upgrade.
I was still down here at Brentwood Primary School, and for some unknown reason they changed everything and whatever, and they shifted me to Sussex Heights over in Oakley. And I thought, oh, this is goodbye ta-ta, you see. Mm. And by that stage, Ted was principal of Upway Primary School. But he drove me to Sussex Heights every morning, and then he drove on to Upway Primary School and he did his job up there. And then he left there and he drove to Sindeltech to pick the kids up to, because they were all in the orchestra playing bass guitars and trumpets, so, so he used to pick them up. And he absolutely amazed me when I look back on it how this man kept everything, and he was very, very calm. Nothing rattled him. How he kept it all working with one car.
Very well organised man.
He was. Yeah. He was meticulously organised.
Yes.
And I mean, things used to throw him. The kids used to, I remember one night they, two of them were waiting for Dad to pick them up, and they'd gone, and we always gave them bus money in case they needed it, you see. Anyway, they'd spent their bus money on lollies in the shop.
As kids do.
And then he says to them, they were, 'cause Dad forgot to pick them up, didn't he? He was doing something else and he forgot. He came home and he's sitting there having a cup of tea, which you always had in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. These two kids rocked in with one with a bass guitar and one with a trumpet. They walked home from Sindeltech because the man wouldn't give them any money to ring up there. The shopkeeper wouldn't give them any money, but they learnt their lesson.
True, don't spend your bus money unless you want to walk.
Listen to older voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
You mentioned that the family had camped, and that was obviously an ongoing thing. Did you have
that
a family?
That started when we, Ted always, he loved the country. He went and did, after his teacher's qualification, he didn't go into teaching straight away. Mm. He had various jobs. He did surveying, he did things, but he always wanted to go back to country because he'd come off country. He lived in Mildura and he'd lived in Werrimal, and his father had a soldier settlement block in Werrimal, and they'd ended up, they all went broke and walked off the land virtually, and because the lots of land weren't big enough. So they ended up in Mildura, and his father worked the fruit in the Sultana dried fruit industry. Ted always wanted to go back to, we looked at buying vineyards, we looked at anything to get himself back. He looked at hobby farms, he looked at all sorts.
And that obviously didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but he took the kids through school. He, in all the schools he taught, he was in charge of all the excursions. He taught in all the schools all around here. Never went taught in anything that he couldn't get home to. He was very home orientated, Ted. Home was the first priority in his life, home and family and kids. And then he used to take all the kids camping in the national parks, the school kids.
Mm.
And he started taking them to Wiperfeld up in the Mallee, because that's where he came from. And knew a lot about it and whatever, but he used to take, we camped. He did never wanted to travel overseas. He just wanted to travel in his own country, loved his country to bits.
Yeah.
He instilled that in his kids. They've all gone back, they're all camping, they all they all take their kids camping and whatever. The grandchildren have all been through it and whatever, you know. So we just did camping holidays. He was always a school teacher when he was camping. Not a school teacher. Yeah, I suppose he was. Because he'd walk the kids up, or the classic example, he'd walk them up onto the sand dunes at the back in Wiperfeld. He'd take them on cross-country walks with a orienteering, with a compass, you see.
Mm.
And the kids are saying, you know where you're going, Dad? Of course I do. If you can't follow me. And when he got in the brush, he always had this long walking stick, and he wore a red toweling hat. And he'd stick the toweling hat, red one, on a stick and hold it up in the air and yell out, can you follow that? And we'd all trundle along following this red stick through the bush, you know. He knew where the Malleefowl nests were, and he'd take you out to see those. And I remember him having the kids all sitting up in a line looking at the ant lines on the dunes. He'd say, sit here and just watch that.
Mm.
And the kids would be watching the ant lines in the bottom line.
Ted has passed away now, hasn't he?
Yes.
When did that happen?
5 years ago. He had, we built, in 1985, we used to camp at Pambula Beach. And we'd camped there since 1972 or something, with a whole lot of people from Glen Waverley and whatever. And in 1985, a lot of land came up. You had to go into a ballot to get a block of land. And they said to us, go on, Ted, go on. We're going in it. Go on. Go in it. And I'd been working for 10 years, and my money was never used in the home. His salary supported us. We got the lot. He ended up getting, we were the only one in the group. We were in the Flinders Ranges camping, and we got this letter to say, you have got lot 23 of Pambula Beach. So we drove home and straight to Pambula Beach to see what we had. And we jumped up and down the middle of the road to see if we could see the beach.
Yeah.
And we ended up with this beautiful block of land that had sweeping views. And we sold it 10 years with the house on. He put in a magnificent garden. But he retired in 1990 from teaching. Oh, he retired before that, but in 1990, the kids had all finished their education. They were all working. They were all still at home. And he said, I'm going to go up and finish. We built a beach house. And we sold that to come back here because Ted had a major stroke.
Right.
And we ended up, he got Parkinson's out of his major strokes and he lost his short-term memory. And they said to him, when they rehabilitated him, he was rehabilitated in Williamstown Hospital, they said, well, go back to somewhere where you know and your short-term memory might come in, and that's why we ended up here, two streets away from where we started in 1960.
So the circle was
done a full circle.
Yeah. Mm. 5 years in some ways is not a very long time. You must still miss him.
I talk to that man on the piano every day.
Wonderful, yes.
And it's funny because I talked to him. He was my mentor, I think.
Mm.
And I never said, go and ask your father. I used to make the decisions. But if I made a bad decision, or I'd run things past him, and he'd just sit here in the chair and look at me and go, I think that's a good idea. Oh, well, probably not.
I look at you and you seem to be a woman that's still got a lot of vitality in her, a lot of life left in her. And I guess, short of walking down the street one day and a bus accidentally hitting you, heaven forbid, you've probably still got another 10 years, who knows, life left in you.
Well,
What do you want? Where do you see the next years? And Helen, what's Helen going to be doing?
He left me in a very good place. And I think he knew that. I think He knew by coming here, doing what he did, he encouraged me to get my... The moment we arrived here, he was a very sick man, and, well, he never lost his speech. That was his saving grace, I think. He could always talk to you. He encouraged me. For the day we came in here, I was on the committee down there. I've been on the committees for 10 years here. But no, he left me in a wonderful place.
Right.
And I've, you know, and I've got an amazing family.
So.
And an absolutely amazing family.
Right.
And I am very, very lucky that I met that man that first day.
It's been a good life, hasn't it?
It's been a blessed life. I've had a wonderful life. Absolutely. I think I'm born in the golden age. I've missed the wars. I've missed the traumas.
And the depression and all of that. Yes.
Yeah, I missed all of it. And I think we are the last of the golden age. I think the next lot are going to have a lot of problems, and probably I won't be here to see those problems come to fruition. I only hope that my grandchildren can tell the older people to sort it out, and they're motivated enough to sort it out too. I think that's the thing. Okay.
Helen, it's been an absolute delight sitting here talking with you. Thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices.
Oh, well, I hope it helps.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.